You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily Season Review Show, brought to you by Ballybet. Now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
All right, let's do it live on the Season Review Show. Merely Bo, the great Z, and you know you mean business.
Right out of the gates.
You go to the voice of the Cleveland Browns, the great Jim Donovan, joining the program. He joins us on the Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea Hotline, official sponsor of your Cleveland Browns. Keep it twisted, Cleveland. Before we can review the Browns, we must review how things are going with the Ponies.
Yes.
Pretty temperate offseason for the winter for the Ponies. I mean, they're able to get into the grass. We haven't had that much snow, Mr. Donovan.
No, we haven't. And you say that to a guy that spent about $1,500 on a brand new snow blower, and I look at it every day, and it's beautiful, and I look forward to at some point using it. The ponies are great. The barn is peaceful. Everybody's having a good time. It's a little chilly today, so blankets are on, but the afternoon looks like a very, very peaceful one for them.
That is fantastic. This season was anything but. I knew we were doing this show, and I was thinking about trying to put this season into perspective. It is unique unto itself, this season. There's like several seasons within the season, Jim. I know all of the things that you went through and your part in all of the season, and you think of all the highs that came with that and the lows. How do you, when you try to look back on it, what comes to mind first?
Well, it was, you're right. Personally, it just had a lot of ups, and it had some real downs, and you had to get through those, and it was something that I really had to get set straight in my mind, and my great wife, Cheryl, really helped me through it, and it was kind of a horse riding thing. She had a horse that was a little bit skitsy when she'd take the horse out on trail, and she would always just say to the horse, "Hey, listen, let's just get to the next tree. We're not thinking about how far we're going to go. We just need to get to the next tree. And when you get there, you go to the next tree." And she said to me very early on, when I was pretty bummed out about what my personal situation was and how I was going to miss so much time, she kept saying, "You just have to get really to the next tree." And that's what I had to do. And so I had the most unbelievable experience when I was able to come back from all of this and get back into the booth with Nathan and Gerard and the Pittsburgh Steeler game, and to smash the guitar and to get reception that I got from the fans. It's something that I will never forget. And I know, Nathan, everybody was pretty bummed out on that plane coming home from Houston after that tough day against the Texans in the playoffs.
Sure.
But there was a side to me that took a deep breath and said, wow, in some ways I was able to pull this off as best I could. So in that way, it's a season I'll never forget.
Yeah, it was magical. And it's funny, we were going through some of the best games of the year.
Yeah.
And I think I thought the Pittsburgh game should be right at the top for the reasons that you just mentioned, because it was such an emotional day and it was such a symbolic return for you. You have a rookie quarterback, you go and you get a game-winning field goal from Dustin Hopkins, and it was just, I thought that was such a special, special day. It's certainly one I'll never forget. And you're right, you know, we got to call a playoff game together, and that was special. And I know how long it had been since you were in person for a playoff game. And so to be able to go through everything that you did when you gave that sign off week one, to come back in Pittsburgh and then, you know, come back full time right there at the end for this magical run with Joe Flacco and then into the playoffs. Yeah, this is It's a crazy year. It's funny even talking about it now.
It is.
All of the different memories and moments that, while it didn't end the way we wanted, and I know for you it was not just 4.5 months of pure joy because there were a lot of struggles and a lot of fight from you, but from a Browns fan's perspective, I mean, you had really a great, fun run that had almost three seasons within a season. It was just, it's kind of hard to even fathom that that really happened, even though it just wrapped up, you know, over a month ago.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, I remember opening day, and I knew what I had to do at the end of the broadcast on opening day, but I remember the body of that game on opening day.
Yeah.
And the other thing that made me so sad is that I realized this was going to be a really special team. It was going to be a special season with the way they played that day against the Bengals, and to watch that defense play at an incredible level of performance and aggressiveness and talent, I said to myself, wow, this is going to be a very special season that this town is really going to enjoy. And it was so topped off by that magical Thursday night against the Jets when they made the playoffs, where everything just fell into place. And the electricity, I can still feel it even talking about it. I mean, that was what I always dreamed of when the Browns came back in 1999. And it took a long time to happen, but boy, I'll tell you what, when it did, it was something I will always cherish being there.
I'm still smiling just listening to you talk about it and thinking about that Thursday night. That's it. It's over.
Yeah.
The great call. It was awesome. Help us, because you called all of the games in which Joe Flacco stuck it to the Browns to then coming back.
All
of a sudden, Joe Flacco can do no wrong. We go on this unbelievable win streak. He sets NFL records. He sets Browns records. Is that one of those things that you think, was I dreaming when you think back at that Joe Flacco was the guy who came in and was the savior for the Cleveland Browns at quarterback?
Oh, absolutely. I will say this. You're right. I mean, he just really owned us through the years. But I always marveled at the way he threw the ball. And so when he was finally doing it in our colors, it was really great. But I always really loved watching him throw the ball because he was just – it was effortless. It was really – it's a pretty thing to watch. When you get a quarterback that can really, as they say, spin the ball – I mean, it's really precious to watch. So in particular, Nathan and Bo, that day against the Chicago Bears, where it looked pretty bad, the Browns were struggling. He was struggling. You know, he was throwing picks that day, and they're down 10, and there wasn't a lot of wiggle room, let's face it, in the playoff chase for them to lose, and especially to drop a game at home. And he got hot, and he got hot with Amari Cooper and David Njoku. And that reminded me of those days early on when he was wearing the purple and black of the Ravens, where there were times where I thought, I think the Browns are going to beat Joe Flacco today. But no, he would get ready and he would pull a great play out or two or three great plays and he would beat us. But it was great to see him do it for us. But I always knew he had the capability because he was just so fluid. And it was, what a great story it was. And to see his personal enjoyment with his family, to be really adopted by the city of Cleveland, you know, and brought into town and brought into everybody's embrace for a period of 5 or 6 weeks was amazing. It really was.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that makes, when you think about how unique that, you'll never see another season like this for about a billion reasons. But Jim, the other part of it is there's kind of three segments of this season. I mean, there is the start of the season. There's the catastrophic injuries to Conklin and Chubb, and then Watson goes down with injury, and then when's he coming back? Well, he comes back, but then he wasn't ready, and then he's out longer. Then he has this incredible game here where he finishes 14-14, and you go, well, you're off, and then he's lost for the season. And Nathan and I said that day that he and I did the show when he was lost for the season, we presided over a funeral.
Yeah.
You know, like it really felt that way. And then you had like these spot starts with Walker and DTR, and then you get the Flacco magic at the end. It's almost like there were three seasons in one from our perspective.
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty dark day when early in the morning you got that communication from the Browns, you know, public relations staff that Deshaun Watson was going to be gone for the year because it was such a high where you said, wow, here we go. Here is Deshaun Watson. All that talked about rust is off of his game. He engineered an amazing comeback and win in a place where it's so difficult to beat the Baltimore Ravens. And here we go. And now you were just hoping, all right, this is week to week. You know, it's going to be every week. He's going to be, there's going to be no worry about this. He's only going to get better and better. And then boom, I mean, it happens that, you know, he's out for the remainder of the year. That's tough. And it's just such a great, great compliment to the Browns coaching staff to be able to do with what they did, not only that next week against Pittsburgh, but what they did after that, to keep putting it together a different way, a different offense, because you have a different quarterback. And it was just it was an amazing coaching job, which I'm glad was very recognized last Thursday at the NFL Honors Program.
You know, guys, if you were to ask somebody when you think the Deshaun Watson injury happened, my guess is most people would say October. It's November 12th.
I was going to say it was like week.
It's the 19th of November when we played Pittsburgh and Jim came back and smashed the guitar and that magical day. But like, think about how far along in the season that was.
So we went, I'm trying to remember this right. So it was Pittsburgh at home.
Yeah.
Then we went
at Denver.
And
then you go
at
West Coast.
LA.
And that's when you called and you said, I just saw Flacco throw it. I'm telling you. And I went, oh, really? Are you sure?
I remember one of,
I'm telling you.
I just remember after the first day he threw it, when I called you and told you that, one of our coaches, who will remain nameless, and I were talking off on the side. Because I was going around to everybody. I'm like, am I crazy right now? Right. Like, this looks really good. Right? Yeah. And one of them said, if we want to win the Super Bowl, he's got to play quarterback for us.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what he did. Mm-hmm. And it was like, there it is. He was the guy from that moment forward. Yeah, that was wild. That was wild. And you mentioned the honors, coach of the year. Mm-hmm. Second time in 4 years Kevin Stefanski has been the NFL's coach of the year. Jim Schwartz gets the assistant coach of the year. Miles finally gets that coveted defensive player of the year, even in a season in which his sack numbers dropped off at the end, but his dominance was unparalleled in the National Football League and the attention that he commanded from other teams. And then Joe Flacco gets comeback player of the year. I felt like it was an appropriate recognition of the magic of this season, because there were not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, 100 reasons on paper why this team should have been 5-12 and well out of the playoff picture. So I thought that was great recognition for the Browns.
Yeah, and you know what? In all of those categories, in the honors, on the honor, you know, coach of the year, comeback player of the year, defensive player of the year, and assistant coach, certainly – there were a lot of worthy candidates in that category, in each one of those categories. I mean, you could make a great case, no doubt about it. D'Amico Ryans did an amazing job. Dan Campbell, a very, very big-time job up in Detroit. But I'm really glad that people really looked into the Browns season and what Kevin Stefanski and his staff, because I know Kevin would defer it and also welcome in his entire staff as to what they did offensively and defensively and on special teams. But I'm glad that everybody who voted looked in deep into week to week what the Browns had to deal with in the way of injuries and how they had to do a quick about face and put something together for the next Sunday and how they were able to do that. Because that really is the great, great story of this season, about how you just really had to work on the fly, because the NFL doesn't wait for you. It doesn't wait. Doesn't give you, you know what, take some time, put this thing back together. It just doesn't happen that way.
No, it does not. It doesn't. And I think there was some real nuance to understanding everything that happened with this season. It pleased us a great deal that it was properly recognized. There's so much chaos around it. We talked about the uniqueness of the injuries in the quarterback, but the one constant, Jim, was the defense. And it was a defense under Jim Schwartz that had personality, that was boisterous, it was chesty, it was sure of itself, especially at home. And probably the most dominant unit we've had around here in, boy, you've been here a long time. Since when have we had a side of the ball that was that dominant?
Well, you know, I go back to the Kozar years in the mid-'80s, and that was a good defense, but it was very, very different. There were a bunch of overachievers on that defense, and they played with that moniker of the dog pound and the dog defense, and and they really kind of fueled their tank. Now, there was a lot of talent on it, too. Chip Banks was a great player. Clay Matthews is, you know, should be a Hall of Famer, and you had the corners. But I don't know. There was kind of a real blue-collar thing. This defense this year, here's the way I really felt that Jim Schwartz did such an exceptional job. I think there's a lot of blue blood on that defense. There were a lot of high draft picks. Yeah. I mean, you know, in the secondary, Miles Garrett, Delpit, Denzel Ward, I'm missing some others, but I mean, there's a lot of real rich talent that I didn't feel at times other years while they were here, they weren't reaching that. And somehow he pulled that out of them finally. Yes. And I think when they saw the way they could play and the effect that it had on their own career, but on the team and on the town, I think then it just was a great snowball effect. So I think his ability to really finally pull out those high first round grades that these guys had, I think that was the biggest accomplishment. He really made them realize what great talent they had.
I think that's right. And I think that whether it is Jim Schwartz empowering players or whether it was, you know, the coaches who had been and for the large part very consistent, but it felt like we saw schematically or inspirationally a perfect situation that allowed some of our young players to really flourish. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah became a star before our very eyes this year, and I think is, you know, in the conversation now as one of the best off-ball linebackers in the National Football League after what he put out there. MJ Emerson, I thought, became a star. Grant Delpit really became a star and was rewarded with a big contract this season. Alex Wright had 4 sacks, I think, in the last 5 or 6 games in really elevating his. So we saw young guys that were drafted by this organization, I thought, take big leaps this year. And JOK, obviously, right at the top of the list that I know as a Golden Domer, he's a guy that you've liked for a long time. What did you think about those young guys being able to ascend as well?
Oh, I just thought that I wasn't at Greenbrier like you were, but when I saw them finally come out on the field, and it was the opening day against Cincinnati, and I know it was raining, and I know Joe Burrow was far less than 100% physically because of that calf problem. But, Nathan, right. There was no way Cincinnati was going to score that day. I mean, there was just no way they were going to score. The Browns defense was at such a high level and all over them, and penetrating into the backfield and smothering wide receivers, and they have talented ones, that was such an incredible look that I just said to myself, I've never seen the Browns play defense like this. So, I mean, it was great watching them back in the 80s, and they were fun, and they had a lot of characters. But this was even more. This was great talent, and it just seemed to really spill off on even, as you mentioned, the younger players. I mean, you see the kid Cam Mitchell comes in. He plays very well. I mean, everybody wanted to be a part of it. Nobody wanted to be a reason why it didn't play well. But I noticed it right off the bat on that opening day when they played the Bengals, and it continued.
It sure did. And as we spend our last couple of minutes with you, sir, I we're reminded of the last time we made the playoffs, and the only thing that was missing was all of you. That we had it full circle. We had all of you, and you were standing over it, calling it, and it gets us all emotional even in the moment. It was emotional, obviously, then. I can't imagine what it was like for you. But you had long told so many of us, because so many of us don't have a point of reference of what this city is like when this team is rolling.
Yeah.
And we finally got it.
Oh, yeah.
We got it, and you were able to preside over it, which I think made it all the more special. When you think back to that night, what comes to mind?
Well, the whole day was pretty incredible. I mean, it's hard waiting for night games. It really is, because you're off your schedule. I mean, you're ready for the 1 o'clock game. You get up, you come down, you're down to the stadium by 10 o'clock or 10:15. But night games are very different. So the wait was really, it was driving me crazy. I mean, I kept saying, you know, maybe I should get in the car and get down there right now. Well, what do you mean? It's 12:15. I mean, you know, you don't need to be down there. But I wanted to feel the city. And even when you drove down, as soon as you're in your car and you could feel it. And that's what, you know, I tell stories like you said about what it was like back in those days. That's, it was back. And I was wondering if it would, when it did come back, hoping it would it feel the same? And it was even a little bit more, because there was a whole new generation of Browns fans that had never tasted it but wanted to be a part of it. So to have it out in the streets and then bring it into the stadium, it was just, I mean, it was like a symphony of sound. It was just unbelievable. And to be able to be a voice track on it along with Nathan and Gerard, you know, that's why you do it. You just hope for it. And you hope for even more. I mean, you know, I mean, the playoffs are very sudden. You know, there's if you get in and if you go down, it's very quick. You can't say we'll get them next week if you have a tough day. But I go back to that Thursday night and say, you know, this is the beginning of hopefully an annual right that we are in part of the postseason. But hopefully we never take it for granted because it's so great. And it's such a the real essence of Cleveland being a great football town. It just pours out of everybody when it really happens. And I'm glad it happened. I'm glad everybody who never got a chance to feel it felt it that night.
Boy, did they. I went out after that night into the city, and it was absolutely on fire. And, Jim, I just want to reiterate what a great privilege and pleasure it was to be able to be with you on that night, how special it was. Because you know this, and I know you felt it when you came back against Pittsburgh. You mean so much to this city, to this region, to anybody around the world who loves the Cleveland Browns. They love you. And I can't tell you, even today, everywhere I go, how's Jim? How's Jim?
Yep.
Praying for Jim, thinking about Jim. People love you. And I think that this season would not have been, regardless of what happened on the field, wouldn't have been as special without you being able to have your comeback and your triumph as well, and to be the voice to it. So it really was just, I get emotional thinking about it, but it was incredible.
It really was, and it was, you know, I have to thank you so much, especially on that day when I came back, because, Bo, when I came back up into the booth after smashing the guitar, I had no air in my lungs, and Nathan is doing the play-by-play and doing a very nice job of it, and I'm like, trying to get some air in my lungs, and Jason Gibbs goes, go ahead, hop right in there. And I'm going, I don't have any air in my lungs. I can't say DTR and get it out because it was just, it was such an incredible day. But I have to tell you, we have a great family up in that radio booth. It is family, and it's so much fun being with everybody. And, God, I was just so happy to be a part of it. However many times I could be up this year in the booth and calling the games, it was such a fight to get up there, but it was really worth the fight.
Well, we love you, buddy, and we thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you again soon, my friend.
Have a great day, guys. Always great talking to you.
All right. That is the voice, the great Jim Donovan, joining us on the Twisted Tea Hard Ice Tea Hotline, the official sponsor of your Cleveland Browns. We'll continue with our season review.
So where do we really go from here?
Yeah, well, we got a lot to get to. We got Gerard's coming on. We got Jake's coming on a little bit later as well. We'll go through some of the position reviews, some of the big questions for the offseason. Mostly, though, we're going to take a look back at a very unique, incredibly memorable, trying at times season for your Cleveland Browns. We're off and running. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You're listening to the Cleveland Browns Season Review Show, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Don't miss Billy Joel, Rod Stewart together for the first time ever, Friday, September 13th at Cleveland Browns Stadium. Tickets are on sale now. Visit clevelandbrownsstadium.com/BillyandRod2024 for more information.
And Rod.
The Billy Joel.
Billy and Rod.
Together for one night only. As we continue here on the season review show, let's do the offense. And this is – the defense is a pretty – that's a very simple conversation when you have the defensive conversation. The offensive conversation is – it's wildly different. As I alluded to in the conversation we had with Jim, I think most people, and even in my own mind's eye, the Watson injury to me happens in October, but it doesn't. The first one happens before that, then he's out, and then he comes back, and it's actually November 12th. It's the 19th is the Pittsburgh game, so it's the Sunday before Thanksgiving that you play Pittsburgh here. That's how late into this thing
went.
Week
10.
Yeah, so you had 10 – 9 weeks of the start of the season, the injury hanging over him, the start and stop, back on the injury, and then eventually back, and then electric play in the second half and the win at Baltimore. And then in between that, you have DTR and PJ winning games that are otherwise you would say impossible to win, and yet they made these incredible plays when they needed to win those games.
In the span of 6 weeks, you beat the number one seed in the NFC with PJ Walker. You beat the number one seed in the AFC with Deshaun Watson. And then you beat the Pittsburgh Steelers with a rookie, DTR.
Yeah.
In the span of 6 weeks that happened. It really is wild. I mean, Deshaun really only played five games. He played against the Bengals, the Steelers, the Titans. The Colts game, he started, but he didn't really play.
Yeah, one series.
And then he played against the Cardinals and the Ravens. So we were 5-1 in the games he started, 4-1 in the games that he really played.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you saw the good news about it is, on one hand, you could say the last three games he played, the Titans game, the Cardinals game, and the Ravens game, he was electric for at least one half in all three of those games.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the one against the Ravens is the most important, clearly. But it's kind of unfathomable. I mean, at that point, when we beat the Steelers, Joe Flacco's not even on the radar. I mean, maybe he was on a list in an office back there.
Sure.
Okay, in case of emergency, break glass, and we call Joe Flacco. But he still wasn't even on the radar. It wasn't until DTR gets hurt, and when he started actually playing pretty well against Denver, I have a lot of confidence in DTR. I feel good about DTR, and I think the changes on the staff are going to be excellent for DTR.
Yeah.
But yeah, wild.
No, and so then you have the injury to DTR, and then you have Flacco, who comes in, and I've told the story before. Like you're an excitable. I love you. Your glass is always more than half full, three quarter full, overwhelming with joy and abundance of it. And sometimes people will hold that against you. God knows why. And I remember you calling me from UCLA, and we talked. It was before a show, and you said, dude, Flacco looks ridiculous. And I said, come on, Nate. It's not off-season Nate time. Nate. It's not that. Dr. Z, what are you talking about? How is it possible? He's 38. Like, what are we talking about? And you're like, I'm telling you. And then he did. And the crazy thing with Flacco, and this is what I think makes this season, it just like sits in a time capsule all unto itself, because you'll just never have all of these events coincide again. There will be very, very little, if next to no carryover to next season offensively.
No.
None. I mean, it will look nothing
there'll
the
be,
same. I mean,
there'll be some. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, who knows what's going to happen with Nick? And you know, there's going to be changes on at receiver, obviously. There could be changes on the offensive line. Who knows? But just from the standpoint of with Flacco, like, is Chief a Pro Bowler if Flacco doesn't come in? I don't know. Is Amari a Pro Bowler if Flacco doesn't come in? I don't know. He provided, I mean, those 300 yard games, we didn't have any point of reference for that.
He played five games. He threw for 1,616 yards.
See?
13 touchdowns, 8 picks.
Yeah.
But yeah, he certainly, I mean, I can just go into the game logs on for those guys. For Chief, for example, who is a Pro Bowler, as you point out, finished with 81, 882, and 6 touchdowns. All career highs, and certainly so deserving. We didn't even talk about the open. I mean, the guy burned his body and played against the Ravens without facial skin.
That's correct. With a mask. Yeah.
Without facial skin. Do you know how sensitive that is? You're wearing a helmet and being hit.
I can't even wrap my head around it, how much it would hurt.
Forged in the flames. He was incredible. But for him on a game log, if you kind of look at what he did, and you're exactly right, obviously, when Flacco comes in, he became – Flacco threw the ball basically to two people.
Here, you do Chief. I'm going to pull up on my
All right, so – And he had some nice games. He was having a good stretch with Seattle on. He goes 477 in a touchdown Seattle, 4 for 26 in a touchdown with Deshaun, 6 for 58 against the Ravens, 7 for 56. Denver was 6 for 59. The first Flacco game, 2 for 17. The final four Flacco games, 6 for 91 and 2 touchdows against the Jags, 10 for 104 and a touchdown against the Bears, 6 for 44 and a touchdown against Houston, and 6 for 134 against the Jets. And then he had 7 for 93 in the playoff game. So, yes, obviously Flacco was a big, big part of what happened there. 200-yard games.
Yeah, the Amari targets, it's not quite as overwhelming, or the Amari production. The targets are crazy. In the last three games of the season, Jacksonville, Chicago, and the Houston
game. Remember, he didn't play against the Jets.
He did not play against the Jets. It was 14 targets, 8 targets, 15 targets. In those three games, it's 7 for 77, 4 for 109, and 11 for 265. In those games, and yeah, it was so there. That's when you think about the offensive part of it. You mentioned, you know, Chief with the burnt face, and you think about the Chubb injury. I mean, that's why I feel like sometimes we provided over two funerals this season. There was the Watson injury, the Chubb injury was a funeral show we did in coming out of that one. It was like, my God, not Nick Chubb of all people, not Nick Chubb. But that happens week two. Conklin happens week one, which allows for DeJuan Jones, who may have been a Pro Bowler had he just played the rest of the season without getting hurt. Yep. He was sensational.
Sensational.
Absolutely sensational.
Yep.
And so that's the thing that it's hard for me to put this into a season-long perspective, because it felt like there were many seasons within the season.
Yeah,
and offensively especially. Defensively, it was pretty constant.
Because it was crazy. It was a crazy, crazy season. That's the answer. It was a completely nuts season for the Cleveland Browns. And it's the things that they overcame are really incredible. And I think that's why it was so special, because whenever – sometimes when you get the emotion of the high, and then you're like so low, like we're out of it, it's over. And then, no, it's not over. It's not. We're back.
Yep.
That's almost takes you to a new level. You know, it's like a stock chart. It's like you're here. We think, oh, this is great. Oh, now we're sad. Oh, no, now we're going higher, a new high. So it is pretty wild when you think about everything that happened there. The quarterback position, and to your point, this offense, I think, is going to look very different than it did a year ago. And I think that what the tip has been with – Ken Dorsey, Tommy Rees, who I think is going to be a little bit more than just a tight end coach, even though he's so young, but coming from being the OC under Saban in Alabama, the offense that they ran, some of those college concepts, and they had a quarterback who was quite mobile for my limited knowledge of college football.
No, he was. But yeah, Miller was great.
You're going to get an offense that I think is very much catered to him, and I think it's an offense that will be very much catered also to DTR, who I thought played significantly better after he was not – he was not prepared to play against the Ravens that first time. It was almost
it was malfeasance,
unfair,
a little bit,
situation. Not that there were any other options.
No.
Everybody was caught off guard.
Yep.
But I thought, you know, he leads you on a game-winning drive against Pittsburgh, and then his last, I think, three possessions in Denver, or his last two possessions for sure, were scoring drives, where he made some big-time throws, moved the ball down the field, got the touchdown. So I think that he... with another year, a little bit more seat, I like where DTR is, because I think Joe Flacco, who, I mean, you had like a bromance with him immediately. Like, he just was such a great guy. He was living a dream. I mean, it was as much for us as Browns fans and that fun and the ride of it. It was magical for him, for his family, for his children. They didn't have to go on an iPad anymore and get on the floor and be like, look, I used to be pretty good at this game. Okay, kids?
Yep.
He showed them. And this city completely embraced him. I would love him to come back. I think he's going to get an opportunity to go somewhere where he can maybe start a season as a bridge quarterback. Like, to me, New England makes all the sense in the world for him now.
Well, I think there's several. I mean, I think smart people, if there were smart people in Chicago, it would make sense to go for him for a year until Caleb Williams is ready.
Sure.
I think Washington would make a lot of sense, and New England would make a lot of sense. All of those places for a year and then get the young guy underneath ready. I think there's incredible value from that if you have somebody like Flacco who has his worldly experience ahead of him. It's not going to work in a place like Tennessee where they had Tannehill who had no interest in being shown the door.
Right.
But if you have somebody like Joe who will be nurturing and helpful and all of those things all the while playing at a high level, like him on Chicago, they might be a playoff team if that's the way that they end up going. And you'd obviously see incredible immediate improvement in New England if it were there.
Tennessee actually – when you say it out loud, to me, kind of struck me as he wouldn't be able to start. So if he's looking to start week one, he wouldn't. But what Levis kind of possesses is in some ways, I think he's a little bit better of an athlete than maybe Flacco was with his legs.
Maybe,
but
yeah.
You're talking about a pocket, strong-armed, big quarterback.
Yes.
And I think Flacco probably would be in, because he plays the game, Tannehill and Levis play the game very differently.
They do.
Flacco and Levis probably play pretty similarly, so he might actually have more value there. Callahan obviously would know him from his time here, so that would be another one that actually might make some sense. I think it would be great if he came back as a backup. I just think that I don't know that I see that happening because for two reasons. Number one, finances, and I think he will have suitors, so you're going to be in a situation where you've got to bid against somebody else. And two, the reality of the National Football League is – yes, having a good backup can allow moments like we just experienced last year, but it doesn't change the ultimate goal. The final eight teams in the NFL playoffs this year, all of them had their quarterbacks play every single game with the exception of C.J. Stroud, who missed two games with a concussion. Other than that, they all played every game.
Yeah.
The Super Bowl, played every game. Final Four, every game. Like, if your quarterback goes down, that's it in this league.
That's it. And it's for us going forward to put a ribbon on the topic, and it'll always it's going to come back to quarterback again. This will now be another offseason of we know the change has been made on the offensive staff, how Deshaun takes to that, how the shoulder heals. But then the other part of it is Deshaun Watson needs to play a full season.
Yes.
And he can't get we can't have him getting hurt.
No.
So you have got to find a way to get him to play a full season because it's been 4 years now by the time he gets to next year since he's played a full season of football.
Yes.
That's a long time, brother. So it's not just schematically making sure that everyone's put in the best position to succeed. It's also health-wise because that's the whole thing. And that's, by the way, they're dealing with the same thing down in Cincinnati with Burrow where he's missed two seasons, the end of two seasons with catastrophic injury. So you've got to have people upright and healthy. And so as much as it's got to look right on the field and he's got to be put in the right position to succeed schematically, he's also got to stay healthy.
Yeah, from 2018 through 2022, because he's only allowed to play six games in 22, he played in that stretch all but one game. So 31, 40, 53 out of 54 possible games. This year, obviously, he played six out of 17. He played seven his rookie year when he suffered the ACL. So, yeah, you've got to get him back to where he's on the field the whole time. And if you do that, I think, obviously, you're going to have a lot of success anyway with him. I did see he posted, though, that he's – believe it or not, at UCLA on those very football fields where we saw Joe Flacco getting work in. He said, back to work. I know he's when I talked to him, he's coming along. Everything's coming along ahead of schedule, feeling great. It's such a freak thing. We got to avoid freak things. You got to stay healthy because that's it. That is, in the NFL, the margin for error is already so small. When you don't have that guy that is really the centerpiece of everything you're doing, you can have magic like we did, but what we did was why it was magical is because it was improbable.
Yeah.
And you cannot count on improbable things to happen with great regularity or frequency.
You know what else? There's a cement ceiling on that.
Well, there was, certainly. As good as it was, by the way.
But there was always a ceiling.
Yes.
You were never beating the kid in Kansas City. That was never going to happen. So that's the reality of that.
I still can't believe, and I know that Gibbe told us the story how Andy Reid sent that letter to Pierce, what's the name of the coach? Antonio Pierce?
Yeah.
I just can't believe that team that just went into Buffalo, and I realize you're taking it lightly, but at some point you think they just flipped a switch. Like, they didn't complete a pass after the first quarter, and they smoked the Chiefs.
Yep.
In Kansas City.
Yep.
Bah humbug.
Yeah. 15.
Well, look at him now.
Yeah, look at him now. Well, rapid fire the season coming up next. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You're listening to the Cleveland Browns Season Review Show, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Hey, Bo here for my friends at Renew Home Exteriors. They're the best in the business. They're introducing new Ascend Composite Clad Siding featuring a beautiful deep grain look, 20 available colors on that. Keep that just installed look for a lifetime with this low maintenance siding. Plus, with Renew's price match guarantee, you can be sure you're going to receive the best price for your exterior project, even after you buy it. Renew Home Exteriors, superior products and superior service. Visit renewestimate.com. For more on that. Time for a little Browns rapid fire as we continue our look at the season in review. Hello, Gibby.
Gentlemen, away we go. Your favorite moment from the 2023 Cleveland Browns football season. Zagura, I'll start with you.
It's tough.
You may only pick one.
I don't know that I can.
Can we do one personal one and one for the team?
Thank you.
Go.
Personal was Jim smashing the guitar, all of us boo-hooing in the booth, and then him coming up. And it's funny that he told that story just then about being out of air because I remember, and maybe that was when he was standing behind me, I remember doing a couple of plays. He walked in, grabbed the headset,
I was like, all right,
let's
go.
And then away he went. Yeah. He was like right back on it, calling it perfectly. So that would probably be the personal one, The team one is just the entirety of that Thursday night. From the moment that I woke up that morning to the time that I went to bed at 3 in the morning, that whole night was just awesome.
Yep. Yeah, that's the clear team one. Although I will, and I've told this before, like that was it Christmas Eve in Houston?
Yep.
That was so cool because, you know, you could feel like families around the area watching that and Amari breaking that record. Everybody wanted him back in. We all love Amari. And like, to have him back in and then to break it, it was just such a cool thing. But the correct answer is the Jets. The personal one for me is Pittsburgh. I mean, the boys were at that game. We had a two-year reunion with Bootsy and Chomps, which was waiting. That brought a tear to my eye. Like, when Bootsy saw him, that was unbelievable. And then Bootsy going, here we go, bro, or Steelers suck, screaming in the stands. Like, and then we won. And the boys got to experience that. We were a row behind T.J. Watt's wife. Like, it was crazy. So that was the personal one for me. That was the one that was pretty good.
What was yours, Gibby?
I mean, the Steeler moment is amazing. Thursday night was cool. The home opener, the season opener.
Yeah.
That we don't win, by the way. We don't win season openers. We don't really have a good track record since then.
Yeah, two in a row, bro. It's all we're stacking them, baby.
But, like, you were like, none of us really knew what it was going to look like because no one had played until the Chiefs game.
Yeah.
It was dominant.
You know, and it just, the weather was, all of a sudden, the weather's bad, and it's one cloud over the entire state of Ohio, and it happens to be over the stadium.
Just over the stadium. Yeah.
And you're just, I don't know how this is going to look or what's going to happen. What is Burrow going to look like? Mm-hmm. And just, it was an awesome, awesome game. A great day. Most disappointing moment.
Chubb. Chubb broke my heart. That broke my heart, man.
So I remember with the Chubb one, the initial time that I saw, because it happened so fast, the way that he went down, I thought he went on his shoulder so hard.
Yeah.
And then I remember seeing the replay in the booth while I was talking, and I almost, like, got sick. And
on television, you knew right away.
That was...
The way that it was shot,
yeah,
you knew right away. And I just... He's the best. And that broke your heart.
So one for me was that one, and then the other would be when Flacco threw the pick six when he was trying to throw it away, where we had a guy open. It should have been a touchdown, but we got beat on a block because we're down to our, you know, fourth, fifth tackles. And that 82-yard pick six, and you knew, like, all right, it's over. Because we were about to make it a one-score game. We were down 10. Yeah. We had first and 10 at, I think, their 35. And then that was just a backbreaker.
Yep.
And you knew that it was over. And that's the thing about it, is as Jim said it, it's so abrupt. It's so abrupt.
Yeah.
Coming in the next day for locker cleanout and going, wow, okay, it is over in less than 16 hours.
Man.
Like, gone. Finito. Gone.
Yeah.
Your team MVP, not named Myles Garrett.
I would go Chief here, but I think you could make a case for Amari and JOK. But to me, I just think Chief found himself in the flames, as it were. But, I mean, just leadership, all of it. And he was a constant. You could count on him always, and he just got better as the season went along. And I thought he just showed the resolve of everything you'd want a Brown to be when he played. That's absurd to play in that.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody's ever had, like, a severe burn, let alone on your face, I mean, it's the most tender situation you could be in. And to try to play a football, put a helmet on.
Not just your face, but the head. Like,
his
your
hand
helmet
is still his hand.
Sweating.
We'll never have pigment in it again in his right hand.
Like, yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, and he caught passes that game with those hands.
Yes, it's in the National Football League.
I love him. I love the man that he has become. I love the player that he's become. Like, I have a great affection and admiration for him. And if it wasn't him, there are four people that came to my mind immediately. Chief, actually five. Chief, Amari, you mentioned. JOK, whom you mentioned. Joe Flacco has to get some consideration.
Yep.
And Dustin Hopkins, I think.
That's true.
Has to get,
I mean, he wasn't there at the end, which sucks because.
Terrible. Yep. And he got hurt on a one bad play that cost us him and a Bohorquez for a game. But I'm gonna go JOK because 101 tackles led the team. 20 tackles for loss led the team and was the most of anybody who was not an edge rusher in the league. And I think he was third in the league. Max Crosby and Danielle Hunter, I believe, were 1-2. 3.5 sacks, 2 interceptions, 6 passes defensed, and a forced fumble. And he grew up as well. Just talking to him, it was very much his maturation. They're very different personalities, but his maturation and seeing him become a man and a leader is very similar to Chief, who you pointed out. Just an incredible, incredible year. He was really, really spectacular.
All right, I would ask you your most improved player in 2023, but I think you just named both of them as your team MVPs, not named Myles Garrett.
I think JOK for me would have been the answer to this one because there were times in the previous year where he felt like he was lost a little bit. Well, he's found.
Yeah.
He just went over the stats. He would be my choice on this
one. So I think, you know, he certainly won MJ Emerson, although he just didn't have the ball production his rookie year.
He was great,
I think, even as a rookie. I'm going to go with one that I think might be a surprise to you guys. Alex Wright. Alex Wright finished this season, would you had 5 sacks? 4 in his
certainly
last.
Came on late.
4 in his last 4 games. Chicago, Houston, Jets, and then 1 against Cincinnati as well. Alex Wright is a guy, and he started playing more towards the end of the year. I mean, he was playing 70% of the snaps the last 4 weeks. Really, the last 3 are the ones that matter, Chicago, Houston, and the Jets. Those were all big games, sacking all 3 of those games. Mm-hmm. He made a huge play, and he had a tackle for a loss. He had 4 sacks and 5 tackles for loss in the last 4 games. Prior to that, he had 1 sack and 1 tackle for loss all season. So he got more playing time. He stepped up because not only against Houston did he have Chicago did he have a sack, he had the stop on the jet sweep on a third down that was a monster play. We don't win without that play. So I'm going to give Alex Wright. I feel like maybe they knew he was a project. They thought maybe a 2-year project. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if he becomes. If they bring in maybe, say, a guy like a Derek Barnett, who's a former first-rounder, who blossomed with Jacques Cesar in Houston, and say, Alex Wright, you're going to be the guy opposite Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
With Oboe.
Yeah.
And then bring in one more vet. And that's
well, that would help everybody if that happens.
Yeah, because it allows you to save significant dollars that are going to be needed elsewhere. But the way he developed, I'm excited about Alex Wright.
All right, we got 30 seconds here before break. Top rookie, real quick, just one name.
DeJuan Jones.
Overwhelmingly.
Yes.
And that's your rapid fire segment.
There you go. All right, coming up next, we go one thought around the 2023 season. The great Gerard Cherry going to join us. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You're listening to the Cleveland Browns Season Review Show, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
a car, truck, or motorcycle accident caused you injury, call the injury lawyers at 1-800-ELK-OHIO for a free case review. Elk and Elk's a proud partner of your Cleveland Browns. As we head out on the Twisted Tea, Hard Iced Tea Hotline, official sponsor of your Cleveland Browns on this special year-in-review show. We are joined by the sideline reporter on your Browns radio network, analyst, of course, three-time Super Bowl champ Gerard Cherry joins us here. Gerard, good talking to you, buddy. We're just before we get into one thought on a lot of these guys who played this year, when you look back on the 2023 season for the Cleveland Browns, how do you put it into perspective?
Great question, Bowen. It's really, for me, one, seeing guys overcome the obstacles and odds that came their way, and just the way it ended was just frank lackluster. I didn't love the ending whatsoever, but the season itself was a great one. You saw just guys showing what it means to have merit, showing what it means to have a heart, showing what camaraderie and being a great teammate looks like, and such an unfitting end for such a really, really promising great season.
Yeah, it was sad and it was very abrupt, but you're right. It was a great season. Just to ask you real quick, what was your favorite moment from the season? Whether personal, give us a personal, and then also from on the field.
Favorite moment from a personal standpoint, I would go with the night that we were at the restaurant in Houston. That was an incredible good time.
Yes, it was a good time. I love it.
That night,
we got 11 wins. We got all these.
Give it. No, I like it. That was smart. The butter cake. The butter cake. Yeah, Gerard was very happy. Some nice cocktails.
You good said personal.
Yeah, no, for sure. By the way, Gibbe, sad Drew missed it, isn't it? It's Yellowstone.
Was sad. Well, I'm sure it paid off very big for him, though.
No, I don't think so.
In the long run.
Zero return on the – zero ROI.
No return?
Zero.
Oh, sad. Who saw that coming? Yeah.
And I'm going to tell him. I'm like, you missed out. That was Gerard's favorite moment.
It really was.
All right, on the field, Gerard.
On the field, it was a combination of things. I would actually say on the field, it was the night we clinched. The electricity in the air, Jets, the crowd was just ruckus, and it was just what you would imagine it would be like in an atmosphere in which you have a very successful football team. That was an incredible sense of feeling, just having guys run around the stadium and celebrate that moment and the tension that was just in the air. And once we did it, it was like, wow, you mean to tell me we went through four quarterbacks, gone through all these injuries, and we are actually on our way to the playoffs? This should not be occurring. We should be in the same state as the Jets or the Bengals right now, and that was not the case. So just a sense of feeling of happiness and the joyfulness of what was taking place, and you can literally just feel it through your bones as it was going on. So that right there was my favorite memory on the field.
Yeah, that's that's an easy one. I think that makes all the sense in the world, and that's one that all the old heads around here have been telling us all about, right?
Yeah.
Well, wait till you see what happens when you get to feel it. Because the last time we didn't, it was COVID, and you didn't get a chance to experience the way you did of something taking over the city.
By the way, I'm going to put this out there for the hopes of a reverse jinx.
Yeah.
Do you see how many similarities there are to the start of this year versus the start of 2020? Chiefs beat the Niners in the Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh.
Same two candidates running in an election year.
A little bit of chaos. You're right.
And then last time that was followed by the world shutting down in the middle of March. So.
Oh boy.
I don't know that I needed that.
I'm throwing out there's a reverse jinx. If we talk about it,
jinx, and then we won't have. Yeah. Then it won't.
It's like. What about Bob? He's like, if I talk about it, then I don't have.
Then
it.
Then you don't have it.
All
right, time, fellas, for one thought. I'm going to give you a name, and then you guys give me one thought on the following names and positions as we look back on the 2023 season on this very special Browns year in review show. Let's start on the coaching staff, and Gerard, we'll start with you, defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz. What's your one thought?
Badassery. He brought swag and attitude to this defense, like, and it was so much needed.
I second that. I like those. I was looking for a thought along those lines, and Gerard nailed it.
Yeah. That was it.
Yeah.
That was
badassery.
Badassery. That was it for sure. Z, I'll go to you with this one. You can go first on this one. The Chief, David Njoku.
Like a phoenix rising from the flames, just incredible leadership. Toughness that is, I really don't think we all can, I certainly can't comprehend it. I can't fathom it.
You can't.
And I don't know that it's given the proper appreciation. Like, what he played through is completely insane. And so for him to grow up, become the star that he did, the leader that he did, get the Pro Bowl recognition that he did, I couldn't be happier. So maybe my thought is pure joy. I am so happy for the Chief.
And for me, it's the emotional leader of the football team. the guy who you look to and say, if he's doing this on this level, why can't I? If he's out here playing, why can't I? If he's out here practicing, why can't I? Yeah. A star was born. We already knew that Njoku had the ability to be great, but he really put it on display this past season. So for me, the Chief is the emotional leader of this football team, and a star is born.
I think it's one of those things where, like, if you made a list of 10 crazy things that happened, it's one of those things that you would forget about, and then when you remembered it, you would go, oh, my God, Chief's face burnt off, and he played.
Yes.
And then you'd go, that needs to be way higher.
Well, that's how it was in our opening segment. We talked 20 minutes and didn't mention it, and I was
like, oh, my God, that's top five crazy things that happened.
Absolutely.
Was that. All right, Gerard, this one comes back to you. Amari Cooper.
The silent assassin. I mean, Coop put on one of the best displays I've ever seen a wide receiver do against a defense. What we witnessed against the Texans the first go-around and that level of dominance, and it's nothing like watching greatness, especially from the sideline perspective that I had, and it was just so impressive just to watch him be so dominant about it. But in the process, there was no bravado in it. It was just, hey, this is what I do because I'm Amari Cooper. So, again, the silent assassin.
I'm going to say a master of his craft. Just such a technician, incredible route running. Something as simple as in the game against Houston where you're going to talk about the bombs and the 265. Well, one catch came on a simple third and one where he just lulled the DB to thinking he was just doing a little block and then exploded out of it for a completion and a nice gain on a slant. Just every little detail, so good. Great leader, great toughness. Obviously, the Houston game is what you remember, but when I think of Amari Cooper in this season, I will never, ever forget the catch against the Bears, which has as much to do with him as Flacco, but to me, that was just – that's one of the most unbelievable plays I've ever seen.
It certainly was. Back to you, Z, for this one. Big Thanos, Duan Jones.
Tall on talent. What a human being, too. Just such a nice young man and just dominant. He's a stud. I mean – absolute steal of the draft. I mean, he will be one of the steals of the draft. Duan Jones is going to be, I think, a perennial Pro Bowler. I think he was going to be one of the most dominant pass blockers in the league, and I think that he is going to become one of the better run blockers in the league as well. I think he has a chance, and I don't think it's hyperbole. You guys might check me. I think he has a chance. If he stays healthy and plays for a decade, I think he has a chance to be a Hall of Famer. That's how good I think he's going to be.
I don't think it's an overstep based on what he did in year one. Gerard, do you?
Not at all. Consider who he went up against and how he shut them down. He went up against, at practice, Myles Garrett. And then when you think what he did against TJ and that he shut him down and other guys that he went against prior to getting injured, you had a situation where a guy was drafted late and he played like a top five pick. That's what we acquired in the NFL draft. Think about that. We have a tackle who's a late round draft pick, but played to the level of a Hall of Fame, all-pro level his rookie season going out there. And there was question marks going into the season. Would he even make the squad?
I think it's a testament to Andrew Berry and his staff that in the 2 years we haven't had first-round picks, I think if you were to redraft those drafts, I think MJ Emerson's a first-round pick.
Yeah.
And I think Duan Jones is a first-round pick.
Well, I think I'll tell you what. They can draft offensive linemen and they can draft defensive players. Secondary especially.
Yeah.
Secondary linebacker. This one's going to be about the other positions, but that's something that they've proven that they can do. Gerard, this one to you, Myles Garrett.
The defensive player of the year, what first comes to mind is that he deserves that honor and that accolade. He had been searching for a very long time. And the interesting thing about it is that when he stopped talking about it and he went on the field and went about it is when it came his way. But one thing I will not forget about this season with Myles is that game that he had against the Colts where he was just doing what he wanted and blocking kicks and jumping over centers and just doing some insane athletic feats, just a true representation of what he's about. But here's the thing that no one's really talking about. I watched him after that Denver game, guys. His shoulder was out of place. He couldn't put his jacket on. But he didn't bemoan it. He didn't cry about it. He proceeded to play the next 7 weeks, I believe, not fully himself. But you would never have known that. And I know people talk about the sack toll and all that, but he sucked it up. He was there for his teammates and definitely played a part in why we were in the playoffs.
Quite frankly, he was the defensive player that opposing offenses worried about the most in the National Football League, period. And that's why he won the award.
Yeah, that's it. We talked about him a little bit earlier. Back to you, Z, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah.
Superstar, breakout, did everything the right way. You talked to Jason Tarver, the Browns linebacker coach and great friend of this program. Couldn't be happier with the dedication that JOK showed, the way that he stepped up. And he became one of the biggest off-ball linebacker playmakers in the NFL. Playing 20 tackles for a loss, multiple picks, multiple sacks. I mean, 100 tackles. Mm-hmm. 20 tackles for a loss out of 101 tackles is, for an off-ball linebacker, is crazy. He's just such a player stud, and he's another one. If he can stay healthy, he's got an opportunity to be, I think, a great.
And for me, first thing that comes to mind, best dressed in the National Football League.
That's right.
The Pits were on fire on a regular weekly basis. He would represent before and after the game, sometimes switching it up. But with that being said, what he did on the football field was pure dominance and elegance and aggression all at the same time, along with his dress code. So extremely impressed with the step that he took this year in that he became a guy in which you're saying to yourself, he has the ability to be a defensive player of the year in the way in which he played. And what he did, and I know I don't want to harp on what took place in Texas, the last game of the season, the playoffs, but I will say this, he certainly made his presence felt in that football game despite the loss.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Gerard, we'll stay with you for the next one. Denzel Ward.
We saw that when Denzel Ward is not in our secondary, we're not the same secondary. Yep. Denzel Ward doesn't have much to say, but he lets his play speak for him, and he does a lot of loud talking when on that football field because he's a tremendous football player. And, again, I can't say it enough. When he was not out there, we were not the same unit. We were not the same in the secondary. We were not as efficient and potent. So Denzel Ward is pivotal to our success, and we found that out for the times in which he was away. But when he was on the football field, guys, he was spectacular.
He's one of the best man-to-man corners in the league. He is an absolute difference maker. I think at one point, two-thirds of the touchdowns we had allowed through the air, which were not many, happened when he was not on the field. So, yeah, he is a huge difference maker and a true number one corner.
Yeah, he's the best mirror corner in the league.
So I purposely didn't say mirror.
But you put it up there for me.
Right, I purposely didn't say mirror.
Just on the team. Just right. So I could have just weigh in a little bit.
Exactly.
Finally, for you, Z, Dustin Hopkins.
Probably the player acquisition of the offseason, right? I mean.
Of the offseason, yeah. I think that's fair.
Trade him, forget a seventh-round pick. You cut Cade York, which had to be a very difficult decision given the investment that was made in him and the fact that he does have incredible natural talent. You bring in Dustin Hopkins, and this season would not be what it was without him. I mean, if he doesn't get hurt, he sets the Browns franchise record for most points in a season. He was just a couple, I think three at the time that he got hurt behind Jim Brown. He did not miss from 50-plus. He set a record for most consecutive games with a 50-plus make. He had game winners against Baltimore. He had game winners against the Steelers. He had game winners. We don't beat Indy without him. He made a couple of bombs in that game. He was an absolute difference maker and incredibly valuable. I said he would be one of the five people you talk about being the MVP of the team this year.
Yeah, and prior to Flacco fever, if it wasn't for D-Hop, there's a possibility we do not make the playoffs because he had so many pivotal kicks to save the day and to just, once again, put that special teams unit back in a space to where you said, you know what, we could trust you guys again. Ultimately, when he got hurt, trying to run down a kick in Houston, that haunted us to a large degree. But, again, the acquisition of D-Hop to the team and what it meant and how he just fit right in, along with the other guys that came in the latter part of the season, was just so impressive. And, again, can't wait to see what he does out of injury this upcoming season because he was certainly on his way to breaking some records. And it's fair to say he might have won Special Teams Player of the Year had he kept it going.
Yeah, it definitely is in play. Always a pleasure, buddy. Thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure, guys. And, again, I can't tell you, Bo, how great it was to be at Houston. Yeah. When we went to, that spot was
Mastros.
Mastros did it for you. It's amazing.
That might be my favorite answer on the show.
Yeah,
that's
I want to shout out Gerard for making me eat a 1,000-calorie piece of dessert that still was in my stomach 12 hours after the fact.
We all woke up the next day like, why did we do that?
That was awful. Anyway,
didn't we go a little turf and turf, you and I?
We did.
A little turf and turf?
We did.
A little. I think you had a bone-in filet, if I'm not mistaken. And I had the lamb chops.
Nice.
A little turf.
And I like the turf and turf.
All I know is the food just kept coming.
And it was good.
It's very good. Yeah.
Yes, quite good.
They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing.
They know how to do it. Yeah. Good stuff, buddy. Good talking to you, Gerard.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, we'll put ourselves in the positions of Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski coming up next. Jake Trotter coming up around 2:35. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You're listening to the Cleveland Browns Season Review Show, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
The Rolling Stones Hackney Diamonds Tour is coming to Cleveland Browns Stadium Saturday, June 15th. Tickets are on sale now. Visit ClevelandBrownsStadium.com/Rolling Stones for more information on that. You know, we're a ways into this year in review show, and there was much chaos and up and downs and peaks and valleys on the offense and even things that were outside of it. There was one constant, though, and it was this defense. And it started with the hire of Jim Schwartz. And it was, I like what Jim said in the first hour when he talked about this. These are blue blood players. What he meant by that is these are all guys drafted to be stars.
Yep.
But they hadn't quite, we'd seen flashes from all of them, and consistent flash, obviously, from Miles and Denzel when healthy. But we hadn't seen it all come together, and then it all did.
Boy, did it. Yeah, this was a dominant defense. And it started with, what do you have to do in the modern NFL? You got to be able to stop the pass. Mm-hmm. The Browns were number two against the pass when it was all said and done. Carolina got just inside of them when the season ended. They gave 3,149 yards. In terms of yards per attempt, they were number one in the NFL. In terms of completion percentage allowed, they were number one in the NFL. In terms of interceptions, they were third in the NFL. They had 18 interceptions this season. Only the Bears and Niners had more. And then, of course, they were number one in quarterback rating allowed. So this was a defense that was elite in that regard. They did everything that they needed to do, and it was all three levels. You had stars at all three levels. Yeah. And you know, we didn't even get to have Grant Delpit finish out the season, which was unfortunate. He played so well and earned himself a new contract, but this was a defense of great consequence. I mean, really, it was the best defense in the NFL, period. You know, you couldn't throw it on us, you really couldn't run the ball on us very well, and you were able to sack the quarterback, take the football away. You were the number one third down defense. You know, we did so many things that were historic in terms of what we did this year.
Yeah.
The one area, and you could say that you can clean up, is red zone. We were not a great red zone or goal line defense. And if we can clean those things up, this team might set more records in 2024.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think was so special about it was how good it was at home.
Unbelievable.
So that there was that thing of, like, when you went down to the lake and that defense played – it was the heartbeat of the stadium, and the city was all there. And there are a few things that it's you know, you think about, like, the iconic lineup introductions and those things. Like, you're always going to get, you know, from St. Vincent St. Mary High School in Akron, Ohio. Like, that's always going to be there.
Yep.
But when Miles gets introduced here, it's the loudest the stadium gets. And this season for him, And he has been a defensive player of the year worthy player for a long time. But you got to win it. And in order to win it, then you start to be able to put yourself on the in the conversation, we talk about the Hall of Fame all the time. He's obviously off to a Hall of Fame start to his career.
Yes.
But in order to be one of those guys who plays in the best game the world's ever seen, like you go play the Space Jam game, you got to stack these things.
Yes.
You got to stack Defensive Player of the Year. You got to stack All Pros. But you got to have it on the resume. You got to be able to look back and go, that guy won Defensive Player of the Year. And so for him to be able to do that, we know what it meant to him. But it wasn't just on the field for Miles this year. It's the way he carried himself, buddy. He was out there chestier than we've ever seen him. I mean, the crossover.
That was week one.
Week one, jumping over centers to block field goals. Like, it just had it all. And to me, this was like, everyone has known who Myles Garrett has been for a long time, and now is just finally coming together in the biggest way possible, in part. And the other thing, like, he doesn't get the recognition if you don't win.
Correct.
He doesn't win Defensive Player of the Year if you don't go 11-6. He doesn't go win Defensive Player of the Year if your defense isn't ranked the way that it's ranked. You have to have those things, too.
Correct. It was – yeah, he had it all. And, yeah, he's – listen, he's on my team that's going to take down Peter King's team, even though I can't use any of his players.
He's
going to be getting after the quarterback on my team there. Yeah, when you're the best player on the number one overall defense, you know, there's something very, very special about that. And, again, I like that we got away from – I think – 10 years ago, the sack swoon that he had at the end of the year would have cost him the award.
Yeah.
But people have gotten so much smarter about the game that it clearly didn't impact him because he won it. And he's been just incredible. Now, part of it is – and here's another thing. This is kind of inside the game, right, is that people don't realize, number one, not only is he getting double or triple teamed, teams average because they are so afraid of him. We're always one of the top one, two, or three in terms of time to throw against.
Yeah.
Teams alter their complete DNA to get football because they can't hold it because Myles Garrett will wreck those games. And so that's incredible. By the way, here's the Browns defense in 2023. You mentioned at home. 14 points a game, 215 yards a game, 32 sacks. Fewest points in the league allowed at home, obviously. Here's some of the things that they did. Total yards per game this year, which was the best since 2014 Seattle. Opponent three and out percentage 33.3, the best since the 2009 Jets. Opponent yards per drive. Teams averaged 20 yards per drive against the Browns since that's the best since the 2008 Pittsburgh Steelers. Opponent first downs per game 14.9, the best since the 2009 New York Jets. So we did, I mean, this was a historic thing. They also forced a three and out, as I said, 33% of drives. That is just... that's a staggering percentage.
And there's other parts of this too, because it is still a young part of its prime defense. A lot of them are just getting their second contract. They're just coming into their own in that sense. So it's going to be together for a while.
Yes.
And you mentioned earlier in the show, Alex Wright. That's the type of payoff that you need.
Yes.
Is you need Alex Wright to come along so that you can use funds in other places. And the fact that he did was an incredible shine on the end of the season, where we were dealing with things left and right, like the Delpit injury kind of comes out. You're like, really? Now he's done too. Like,
and then
that
Ronnie
part of
Hickman
it was great.
Steps up,
and Hickman was great. So you have that organizational depth in the secondary. So you've got this a generational player at defensive end. You've Dalvin Tomlinson was very good. Za'Darius Smith was very good this year. The linebacker play, AWOC back in the mix, and then JOK we've talked about. But then you have these three corners, and when you think about. That's why I thought about when I was thinking about this defense, you think about, is that the best unit the Cleveland Browns have had since when? I'm not sure what the answer to that is. But since a long time is the answer.
Yes.
Because when you're talking about the number one total defense in the league, you're talking about a defense that can win divisions, that can make runs in the playoffs. The offense was a total – it was a moving parts every week, but they were there time in and time out. And I do think that – kind of the DNA of these type of towns. I mean, there's a reason that the Chicago Bears 85 defense is the most popular thing that ever has happened in Chicago. I mean, you could argue that they're every bit as popular as Jordan. Now, think about that. That's not an overstatement. So that same thing happens here with these guys. That's the same thing.
Monsters of
the Midway. Absolutely. The Steel Curtain in Pittsburgh. This part of the country, we like to punch you in the mouth.
Yeah.
And so they fit the DNA. And none of it happens, I don't think, without Jim Schwartz. He was the chef that could put the ingredients together.
He did. And you're going to have a lot of those, to your point, ingredients back. Here's who we've got to worry about in terms of being unrestricted free agents off of the defense. So the defensive tackle room, you've got a few. Maurice Hurst, Jordan Elliott, Shelby Harris. So you got Dalvin. You need Siaki Ika to step up. You probably maybe you draft another one in there as well, but he's got some veterans. I think Maurice Hurst would certainly like to be back. All of those guys played pretty well. Defensive end, the only one that's not back for sure is Zadarius, and I'm sure he would want to come back, but you got Oboes. Everybody else is under contract. Linebackers, you got some here. Anthony Walker Jr., Kunashik, Phillips, Taki Taki, Matthew Adams. So some key special teams guys.
Yep.
Then Mike Ford in the secondary, key special team guy. And then the veterans that were signed at the end of the year, Daron Harmon, as well as Rodney McLeod, who's on a one-year deal, but maybe he'd like to come back, and then and Corey Bohorquez as a punter. But on the defense, your principal guys, when you think about Miles and Dalvin, they're back. JOK, he's back. The three corners, back. Thornhill, Delpit, back. Like, your core, you're running this back in large part.
Yeah, yep. And this, so now when you think about the, you just went over those changes. Now it's just about taking the next step.
Yep.
And for them to be considered an all-time defense, now you've got to get into the playoffs and make a win or two. You got to go into the postseason, get to an AFC championship game, go smother somebody somewhere in a divisional round. That's the only thing missing on the resume, because everything else is there. We tackled the individual feats this season, long overdue. Miles getting that defensive player of the year. And now for this defense to go down as an all-time great and be in those fun conversations with Seattle or the Jets defense with Rex Ryan, you don't necessarily have to win the Super Bowl. You have to be a constant menace in the postseason in order to have those things. And I do think there's the pieces for it. And I think the collective swagger of them that was brought out by Jim Schwartz travels.
Yes.
That's not going anywhere. They are boisterous. They are chesty. They are full of swagger. Badassery, as Gerard put it.
Which is well said.
A very, very well way to put that. So they will be here for a very, very long time in terms of their focus. Coming up next, Jake Trotter will give us his perspective on the season. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily's Year in Review show right here on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You're listening to the Cleveland Browns Season Review Show, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
WS Billy Joel, Rod Stewart together for the first time ever. It's Friday, September 13th. Cleveland Browns Stadium tickets are on sale now. Visit ClevelandBrownsStadium.com/BillyAndRod2024 for more information.
Billy and Rod.
It's Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for one night only. As we continue with the Browns Year in Review show, we head out on the Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea Hotline. Official sponsor of your Cleveland Browns. Keep it Twisted Cleveland. He is our great friend Jake Trotter, ESPN NFL Nation reporter. There's a book to be written about that season, my friend, and perhaps you will write it. I hope if you are, then I hope I'm not breaking any news, but you could certainly do it. When you put this season into perspective and I say 2023 Cleveland Browns, what are the first things that come to mind?
I thought it was a lot of 2023. I thought it was a lot of fun. Didn't you guys? It was like a fun season.
Yeah.
I mean, it was all over the place. It was, you know, five different quarterbacks and elite defense that had some historical performances. Joe Flacco coming out of nowhere to win comeback player of the year. I've covered the Browns for five seasons. This was the most fun I've had covering the team.
It was fun. It was magical. It was improbable. It was resilient. It was a lot of things.
But you also had these incredible valleys. I mean, you have like these catastrophic injuries, Jake, that like the when Nick Chubb goes down, you just go, my God, not him.
Anybody.
Yeah, and you know, coming out of this season, and although it went right, typically you would say, okay, man, there's a lot to really carry over into 2024. And there is to some degree, particularly defensively. But because of the injuries, it's almost like we're back to last offseason. We're like, I don't really know what to make of the offense going into this year's opener. I mean, you know, Nick Chubb probably not going to be ready to go for the opener. And then, you know, to be fair, when he gets back, you know, I think it's going to be not fair to him to expect him to immediately be the runner he was. And by the way, guys, Nick Chubb was going to have his best season before that injury. He looked as good or better than he's ever looked, in my view. He was averaging, what, 6.1 yards per carry before that Pittsburgh injury. But, you know, he's been the heart and soul of this team. And, like, now you know, you can't really count on him to be that player right away. And then, obviously, the quarterback situation is its own thing. So, yeah, as fun as 2023 was, you know, there's some things you really can't take away from it because they had to play with so many replacement guys.
Well, that's what I said. It is a time capsule, and that's why it's not a chapter of a book. It's a book on its own.
Yep.
Because there is no carryover. There's nothing before that kind of carried into it. I mean, my God, Joe Flacco played the last five games. I mean, there's
Joe Flacco.
Joe Flacco played the last. You didn't start five quarterbacks. This was nuts. It was absolutely nuts.
Yeah, and he played so well that he won Comeback Player of the Year, despite playing only five games. He won four of them. You know, got the Browns into the playoffs. Obviously, he didn't play great in the second half in Houston the second time around. But before that, man, he was terrific and really gave the Browns a jolt that they needed. I mean, I felt like that Denver game on the road, you know, I thought DTR was actually kind of turning a corner, like playing pretty well. But didn't you guys feel like, man, this team feels like it's fading a little bit? And Joe Flacco comes in the next week, starts against the Rams, and it was like these guys have something to re-energize them with down the stretch. And
absolutely,
that's definitely what happened. I mean, Flacco wasn't perfect. You know, the interceptions were, you know, a big Achilles heel, but he made so many plays, and it just felt like this entire team was buoyed by that. And I don't know that they make the run that they do without him. I mean, I just kind of felt like everything was starting to slip away in Denver, and they completely reversed course because of what Joe Flacco brought to the table.
Yeah, it was, again, special, magical, hard to believe. Joe Flacco was incredible. But while this season was great, the Browns obviously felt that changes needed to be made, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So when you think about trying to take that next step, it all has to do with Deshaun Watson. So what do you think about the coaching staff changes? Ken Dorsey, Tommy Rees coming in here on the offensive, Deuce Staley on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, they've done everything that they can do to put Watson in position to succeed. And I think that they're going to be aggressive this offseason in trying to get more weapons around him, particularly the receiver position. We'll see what happens. I don't know who's going to be available. Maybe nobody of the top line guys, but they're going to be aggressive in trying to upgrade the talent around him at the skill positions, in my view. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a completely different staff. I mean, like, I didn't anticipate that happening coming into the offseason. I thought there might be a change or two, but to turn over, what, 80, 90% of the offensive staff, that surprised me. And it's going to give them a chance to reevaluate a bunch of different things. One, is Kevin Stefanski, you know, the right play caller for Deshaun Watson? Or is it Ken Dorsey? Or can Dorsey bring things that can get, you know, Watson going a little bit more, at least playing consistently a little bit more? You know, what ideas do the other guys have to add to the offense? And sometimes you just need, you know, kind of a change, you know, some fresh looks at it. I mean, we saw that work wonders for the defense. And I thought they had a lot of good defensive coaches in 2022. It just didn't. This didn't work out for whatever reason. But, you know, Schwartz comes in and they perfect scheme for the personnel and in the way they went. So we'll see if that happens offensively. I will say, I think you guys will probably agree, this is I feel like we said it last year, but it really is true now. This is a huge year for Watson. I mean, if this is going to happen,
yes,
it's got to happen this year. And if it doesn't happen this year, then – you know, with everything you've invested in this team, you're going to have to start looking at some contingency options. So it's not just that he's got to play well and play consistently well, even though the flashes have been there. He's got to be healthy. Like, they cannot go through another year where they get eight games from him. But that would just be a total catastrophe for this trade. And so, you know, he's got to protect himself. He can't try to take on safeties. And that's going to be a delicate balance because a lot of the plays he made, you remember that second half in Baltimore where he played the best half of his Browns tenure. You know, he was 14 of 14, and that sticks out. But if you watch that game, he didn't really hurt Baltimore through the air as much as he did with his legs. He made so many plays with his legs. I think he threw for like 130, you know, which is good, but there was like four or five first downs that he just manufactured by scrambling and making it happen. And so he's got to balance that with being healthy. And, you know, he's going to be coming off arm surgery. So what does that look like in mini camp and training camp? It's going to be fascinating, but they've done everything that they can do. And if, you know, he can play up to the level that he has played at before, there's no reason this team can't make a deep run into the playoffs next season.
Well, yeah, and I think the other part of this is you just watched a 28-year-old in your conference win his third Super Bowl, and you have a team that is primarily in its prime or the very beginning of its prime, and so the time to strike is now. I mean, that's it. Like, we talked about this earlier, Jake. Like, this was we agree with you. This was the most fun that we've ever had.
Oh, yeah.
It's certainly that we've had being part of the Browns, but it was also something that had a concrete ceiling on it. Like, it was going to stop at some point. This was never going to be a team that was going to make a run to the Super Bowl or anything like that. There was a ceiling that this team could be because of some of the limitations and because of some of the injuries. And so when you have this turnover, it's because you have to find a way to beat that wizard out of Kansas City. You got to find a way to first and foremost win your division and the dang near unanimous MVP out of Baltimore. So that's what this whole offseason's about. And yeah, that seems similar to the last couple off seasons, right?
Yeah, and they're going to have to earn it this year. And I hate evaluating schedules in February because so much is going to change. And some of these teams are going to look worse. Some of these teams are going to look better. But, they got a break in the schedule. Like, it was pretty favorable. You got, hurt Joe Burrow and then no Joe Burrow, although that game didn't matter. You got a lot of backup quarterbacks you got to face this year. And next year you look at the schedule and it is like, it's gotta be, Nathan, you tell me, like, it's gotta be on paper the best home schedule in terms of quality of quarterback that the Browns have definitely faced since 99 and maybe even, you know, way before that. I mean, they've got off the top of my head, tell me who I'm missing. You got Mahomes, you got Herbert, you got Dak, obviously Burrow and Lamar. You've got Tua, I believe, and I feel like there's like somebody else that they have of consequence coming to town, and then you got to go play, Trevor Lawrence, you got to go play, Burrow and Lamar on the road again. Jalen Hurts is on the schedule. You're probably gonna have to play, Drake May in that Washington game. I mean, it is loaded. Absolutely loaded. Like, if you don't have tickets for next year, this would be the year to have it, because you're going to see, I don't know, 8 of the top 10 quarterbacks of the NFL in that stadium. It's crazy.
Yeah, and it's not just this year either, but you're right, this year and in 2025, the way that it lines up. I was talking about this with somebody last night. In 2025, the Browns' home schedule is wild in terms of the things that are already set. Oh, I'm going to pull that up. But yeah, you are facing, this is not an easy schedule. 2025, you get at home, obviously, Baltimore, Cincinnati, and the Steelers. Then you get the Bills, the Dolphins, the Packers, the Vikings.
So 2025. Who am I forgetting in 2024? There's like a really good team I'm forgetting that I feel like they're playing.
I thought you had, let's see, 2024, you've got Ravens, Bengals, Steelers, Chiefs, Chargers, Dolphins, Cowboys, Giants.
Okay, so I mean,
even though the Giants are the worst.
Daniel Jones.
They're the worst one on that, but, I mean, they're still the New York Giants. I mean, it's a great home slate.
Yeah.
It's a great home slate.
Yeah. And then on the road, you've got Philly, Jacksonville, obviously the three divisional games. Who else am I – oh, Vegas, right?
Vegas, Denver, because we go to Denver, I feel like, every single year.
Every year.
Denver, Vegas, Philly, Washington, Jacksonville, New Orleans, and then the division games.
I wonder. Vegas, I wonder what Vegas is going to look like. Like, that might be. That might be a team that looks better in July than they look right now.
Which team?
Vegas. I wonder if Vegas is going to look more intriguing today, depending on what they do at quarterback. But
I feel like that's where Justin Fields is.
A cakewalk team with Antonio Pierce.
No, this is what happens. You play a good season. You have a good record. You play a tough schedule because now you're matching up your matchups. Are much tougher than they had been in the past. You get the Dolphins, right, is a non-conference matchup game, and then the Jags.
Yeah, I mean,
that would be
you can't – you're not going to get – you know, like, there were a couple games this year where they just – the Browns basically just had to show up and you felt like they were going to win. Like that Arizona game.
Arizona.
There's not a lot of that on the schedule this year.
No.
Next year. So you're gonna have to earn it. But you know what? You're going to have to beat all these teams anyway if you want to get to where you want to go. I mean, look at Kansas City. They beat Miami, at Buffalo, at Baltimore, and the 49ers. I mean, they didn't get any break whatsoever. So, I mean, you're going to have to beat the best to be the best.
Now, one thing we talked about the schedule, we talked about who we're playing. We haven't talked about where we're playing. And Peter King said he felt like it might be likely that the Browns are going to Brazil, which would be the game against the Philadelphia Eagles. What are you hearing on that?
Passports in order, Jay?
Yeah, what can you tell us about this?
I don't know anything, but I think it's – here, the Browns are going overseas, it feels like, this year. So it's either Brazil or London against Jacksonville, right?
I'll take Brazil.
You would think it'd be one of those two. You know, they were supposed to go in 2020, play Jacksonville in London, and that game got nixed because of COVID. So the Browns are due for an international game. And yeah, I mean, it feels like we already know they're going to be on the road the weekend of that concert, right? And by the way, I already have my tickets, so I'll be there. Listen,
there you go, Billy and Rod, 2024.
Yeah, way to go, without a doubt. Billy, it's gonna be a great concert. So they're gonna be on the road, so that increases the chances even more that it could be that Brazil game. And I've never been to South America before. That would be a wild first game against a really interesting opponent, and a chance to get off to a good start again.
It would be wild. And it means you'd open up back-to-back on the road. So
yeah, Jake, you may have to go down.
CBD in Rio.
Z will be down there.
Where's the game again?
Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Sao Paulo, yeah.
Yeah. Rio would be a different scenario. CBD in Rio, that feels on brand. I don't know about Sao Paulo.
I feel like CBD in Rio would have a different connotation to it.
There's no question it would mean a lot to everybody, Jake. Great talking to you, buddy. We'll see you at the Combine.
Okay, see you guys.
All right, that's Jake Trotter joining us there on the Twisted Tea Hotline. So much more to come on this special year-in-review edition of Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You're listening to the Cleveland Browns Season Review Show, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Be part of one of the most passionate fan bases in the NFL. Join NextGen STM, presented by Ticketmaster. The official wait list of your Cleveland Browns being a NextGen STM is the best chance to become a season ticket member in future seasons. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/NextGenSTM to reserve your spot today. This was fun, looking back on a very, very fun season.
Yeah, it was the most fun. And I think that was it brought so many people in this community together, and everybody just was having fun, and the Browns were fun, and the vibe, as Jimmy Bang Bang would say, was as good as it's ever been. Mm-hmm. You know, it was special. It was magical, and it also left you wanting more.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I think some of these moves we've already seen are about. And now we'll get into the combine, and we'll get into free agency about shaping this roster to go after the Lombardi Trophy.
That is the task at hand. The next level is coming up next. Thanks for listening, everybody. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.